You wouldn't feel a thing. I'm offering that to you if you want.
You don't seem to want it, Jared said.
It makes the transfer more difficult from what I can see from the simulations, Bhutan said. The transfer will take more securely if you're conscious as well.
Well then, by all means, I'll stay awake, Jared said. I wouldn't want to make this more difficult for you.
Listen, Dirac, Bhutan said. This isn't something personal. You have to understand that you offer a way to make this all happen quickly and cleanly, with the least amount of bloodshed on all sides. I'm sorry you have to die, but the alternative is far more death.
Murdering every Colonial Defense Forces soldier with your virus doesn't strike me as the least amount of bloodshed, Jared said.
Bhutan turned and told the Oban to start the preparations. The Oban went to the console and went to work.
Tell me, Jared said, after you've killed all the Colonial Defense Forces, who is going to protect the human colonies? They won't have defenders anymore. You'll have killed them all.
The Oban will protect them in the short run, Bhutan said, until we can create a new defense force.
Are you sure about that? Jared said.
Once you give them consciousness, why would they need to do anything for you anymore? Or do you plan to withhold consciousness until after they give you your next demand?
Bhutan gave a quick glance back at the Oban in the room, and then faced Jared.
I'm not withholding anything, he said. They'll do it because they've agreed to it.
Are you willing to bet the life of Zoe on it?
Jared asked.
Because that's what you're doing.
Don't lecture me on my daughter!
Bhutan spat at Jared and turned away. Jared gave a sad shudder, thinking of the choices he was making.
The Oban nodded over at Bhutan. It was time.
Bhutan looked over to Jared one more time.
Anything else you want to say before we get started? He asked Jared.
I think I'll save it for later, Jared said.
Bhutan opened his mouth to ask what that meant, but before he could, a noise erupted from outside the station. It sounded like a very large gun going off very rapidly.
Harvey lived for this sort of shit.
His chief worry as they approached the science station was that Lieutenant Sagan would do one of her patented, thoughtful, methodical approaches, something sneaky that would require him to tiptoe around like a goddamn spy or something. He hated that crap. Harvey knew what he was and what he was best at. He was a noisy son of a bitch, and he was good at making things fall down and go boom. In his few introspective moments, Harvey wondered if his progy, the guy he was mostly made from, hadn't been something really antisocial, like a pyromaniac or a professional wrestler, or maybe had done time for assault. Whoever or whatever he was, Harvey would have been happy to give him a nice big smack on the lips. Harvey was absolutely at peace with his inner nature, in the sort of way that Zen Buddhist monks could only dream about. And so when Sagan told him his job was to draw attention to himself so she and Seaborg could do their jobs, Harvey did a little dance on the inside. He could definitely draw attention to himself. The question was, how? Harvey was not especially introspective, but this didn't mean he was stupid. He was moral, within his lights. He understood the value of subtlety, even if he wasn't much for it himself, and one of the reasons he could get away with being loud and obnoxious was that he was a fair stick at strategy and logistics. Give him a job and he'd do it, usually in the most entropy-producing way possible, yes, but also in a way that achieved exactly the aim it was supposed to. One of Harvey's guiding lights in terms of strategies was simplicity. All things being equal, Harvey preferred the course of action that let him get into the middle of things and then just buckle down. When asked about it, Harvey called it his Occam's razor theory of combat. The simplest way of kicking someone's ass was usually the correct one. It was this philosophy that had Harvey taking the hovercraft Sagan had stolen, mounting it, and after a few moments to glean the fundamentals of navigating it, rocketing on it toward the door of the open mess hall. As Harvey approached, the door to the mess hall opened inward.
some Oban heading to duty after dinner. Harvey grinned a mad grin, gunned the hovercraft, and then braked it just enough, he hoped, to jam that fucking alien right back into the room. It worked perfectly. The Oban had enough time for a surprised squawk before the hovercraft's gun struck it square in the chest, punching backward like it was a toy on a string, hurling down nearly the entire length of the hall. The other Oban in the room looked up while Harvey's victim pinwheeled to the ground, then turned their multiple eyes toward the doorway, Harvey, and the hovercraft with its big gun poking right into the room.
"Hello, boys!" Harvey said in a big, booming voice. "The 2nd Platoon sends its regards!"
And with that, he jammed down the fire button on the gun and set to work. Things got messy real fast after that. It was just fucking beautiful. Harvey loved his job. From the other side of the compound, Seaborg heard Harvey start in on his happy work and had just a little bit of an involuntary shudder. It's not that Seaborg disliked Harvey, but after a couple of combat drops with the 2nd Platoon, one got the sense that if you didn't like things to explode unnecessarily around you, you would want to stay well clear of Daniel Harvey. The crash and bang did exactly what it was supposed to. The Oban soldiers at the generator abandoned their posts to help out those of their number who were being cheerfully massacred on the other side of the compound. Seaborg did a modified sprint to the generators, wincing as he did so, and surprised what he guessed were some Oban scientists as he came through the door. Seaborg shot one with one of those weird Oban weapons and then snapped the other one's neck. That was more disturbing than Seaborg would have expected. He felt the bones, or whatever they were, give way as he struck. Unlike Harvey, Seaborg was never a natural with violence. He wasn't much of a natural in anything. This was something he sensed early and hid with overcompensation, which is why so many of his training squad members thought he was an asshole. He got over it. Someone is going to push you off a cliff if you don't. But what he never got over was the idea that when it came right down to it, Special Forces was not a good fit for him. Seaborg went into the next room, which took up the majority of the shed and which housed the two massive forms Seaborg assumed were the batteries he had to destroy. Harvey's distraction was going to work only so long as Harvey managed to keep himself alive, which Seaborg doubted would be very long at all. Seaborg looked in the room for controls or panels that could help him, or at least give some indication how he could shut down the power. He saw nothing. All the panels and controls were back in the room he left the two dead Oban in. Seaborg briefly wondered if he should have left one of them alive and tried to convince it to shut down the power station, but he doubted he would have been very successful at all. "Fuck!" Seaborg said out loud in frustration, and for lack of anything better coming to mind, raised the Oban weapon and shot at one of the batteries. The projectile embedded in the metal skin of the huge battery, momentarily raising sparks, and then Seaborg heard a high-pitched whine, like air whistling out of a very small hole. He looked up at where he shot. A high-pressure stream of some green gas was spurting out. Seaborg looked at it. "What the hell?" Seaborg thought, raising his weapon and aiming at the hole from which the stream was emanating. "Let's see if that shit's flammable." It was. The power generator blast knocked Jane Sagan right on her ass and blinded her for a good 3 seconds. She recovered sight just in time to see large chunks of the power generator's room hurling through the sky in her general direction. Sagan backtracked enough to avoid the debris and instinctually checked her integration to see if by some miracle Seaborg had managed to survive. There was nothing there, of course. You don't survive a blast like that. She could feel Harvey, though, shocked for a moment out of his orgy of violence. Sagan turned her attention to the science station itself, its windows shattered and parts on fire, and it took her several seconds of formulating a plan before she realized that she had integration once more. knocking out the power somehow brought back her brain pal. Sagan took an entirely inappropriate 2 seconds to revel in the return of her integration and brain pal before she wondered if she were still integrated with someone else. The blast knocked both Bhutan and the Oban to the floor. Jared felt his creche shake violently. It managed to stay upright, as did the second creche. The lights went out, to be replaced a second later by the soft green glow of lights running on emergency power. The Oban got up and went to the wall to activate the lab's backup generator. Bhutan picked himself up, cried for Zoe, and ran out of the room. Jared watched him go, his own heart in his mouth. "Dirac," Jane Sagan said. "Answer me." Integration flowed over Jared like golden light. "I'm here," Jared said. "Is Bhutan still alive?" Sagan asked. "Yes," Jared said. "But he's no longer the target for the mission."
"I don't understand you," Sagan said.
"Jane," Jared said, using Sagan's first name for the first time either could remember. "Zoe's alive. Zoe's here, his daughter. You need to find her. You need to get her away as fast as you can." There was an infinitesimal hesitation from Sagan. "You need to tell me everything now," Sagan said. "And you'd better hurry." As quickly as he could, Jared dumped everything he learned from Bhutan to Sagan, including the recordings of the conversations he had begun to create as soon as Bhutan restored his brain pal capacity, hoping against hope that some of his squad might have survived and would have found a way into him. Sagan wouldn't have time to go through all the conversations, but they were there for the record. "We should still take Bhutan back," Sagan said, after Jared finished.
"No!"
Jared sent the word as strongly as possible. "As long as he's alive, the Oban will come for him. He's their key to the thing they want the most. If they were going to go to war because he asked them to, they would go to war to get him back."
"Then I'll kill him," Sagan said.
"Get Zoe," Jared said.
"I'll take care of Bhutan."
"How?"
Sagan said.
"Trust me," Jared said.
"Dirac," Sagan began.
"I know you don't trust me," Jared said. "And I know why you don't trust me. But I also remember what you once told me, Lieutenant. You told me, no matter what, to remember that I was Jared Dirac. I'm telling you now, Lieutenant. I know who I am. I am Jared Dirac of the Colonial Union Special Forces, and my job is to save humanity. I am asking you to trust me to do my job."
An infinitely long pause. From the hallway, Jared heard Bhutan heading back to the lab.
"Do your job, Private," Sagan said.
"I will,"
Jared said.
"Thank you."
"I'll find Zoe," Sagan said.
"Tell her you're a friend of Mr. Jared, and that he and Daddy both said it was okay to go with you," Jared said.
"And don't forget her stuffed elephant."
Jared sent information on where he thought Zoe would be, just down the hall from the lab.
"I won't," Sagan said.
"I need to break integration with you now," Jared said.
"Goodbye, Lieutenant."
"Thank you.
Thank you for it all."
"Goodbye, Jared," Sagan said.
And before she broke integration, sent him a wave of something that resembled reassurance. And then she was gone. Jared was alone. Bhutan re-entered the lab and yelled at the Oban, who snapped some switches. The lights came back up in the lab.
"Let's get going," Bhutan said to the Oban. "We're under attack. We need to get this done now."
Bhutan looked over to Jared briefly. Jared just smiled and closed his eyes and listened to the sounds of the Oban tapping on the panel, Bhutan opening and entering his creche, and the low thrum of Jared's own creche powering up for the consciousness transfer. Jared's primary regret at the end of his life was that there had been so little of it. Just a year. But that year, so many people and experiences. Jared walked with them in his mind and felt their presence a final time. Jane Sagan, Harry Wilson, Kynan, General Mattson and Colonel Robbins, the second platoon and the closeness they shared in integration, the strangeness of Captain Martin and the Gamorans, the jokes he shared with Lieutenant Cloud. Sarah Pauling, best beloved.